This is Audible.
Amber Allen Publishing presents The Mastery of Love, a practical guide to the art of relationship, written by Don Miguel Ruiz and read by Jill Eikenberry and Michael Tucker.
Thousands of years ago, the Toltec were known throughout southern Mexico as women and men of knowledge. Anthropologists have spoken of the Toltec as a nation or a race, but in fact the Toltec were scientists and artists who formed a society to explore and conserve the spiritual knowledge and practices of the ancient ones. They came together as students and masters at Teotihuacan, the ancient city of pyramids outside Mexico City. Toltec knowledge arises from the same essential unity of truth as all the sacred esoteric traditions found around the world. Though it is not a religion, it honors all the spiritual masters who have taught on the earth. While it does embrace spirit, it is most accurately described as a way of life, distinguished by the ready accessibility of happiness and love. Chapter 1. The Wounded Mind. Perhaps you have never thought about it, but on one level or another, all of us are masters. We are masters because we have the power to create and rule our own lives. Just as societies and religions around the world create incredible mythologies, we create our own. Our personal mythology is populated by heroes and villains, angels and demons, kings and commoners. We create an entire population in our mind, including multiple personalities for ourselves. Then we master the image we are going to use in certain circumstances. We become artists of pretending and projecting our images, and we master whatever we believe we are. When we meet other people, we classify them right away and assign them a role in our lives. We create an image for others according to what we believe they are, and we do the same thing with everyone and everything around us. You have the power to create. Your power is so strong that whatever you believe comes true. You have the same power as any other human in the world. But the main difference between you and someone else is how you apply your power. You have practiced all your life to be what you are, and you do it so well that you master what you believe you are. You master your own personality, your own beliefs. You master every action, every reaction. Once we can see that all of us are masters, we can see what kind of mastery we have. When we are children and we have a problem with someone, we get angry. For whatever reason, that anger pushes the problem away. We get the result we want. It happens a second time. We react with anger. And now we know if we get angry, we push the problem away. Then we practice and practice until we become masters of anger. In the same way, we become masters of jealousy, masters of sadness, masters of self-rejection. All of our drama and suffering is by practice. We make an agreement with ourselves, and we practice that agreement until it becomes a whole mastery. The way we think and feel, and the way we act becomes so routine that we no longer need to put our attention on what we're doing. It is just by action-reaction that we behave in a certain way. To become masters of love, we have to practice love. The art of relationship is also a whole mastery, and the only way to reach mastery is with practice. To master a relationship is therefore about action. It is not about concepts or attaining knowledge. Of course, to have action, we need to have some knowledge, or at least a little more awareness of the way humans operate. I want you to imagine that you live on a planet where everyone has a skin disease. For 2,000 or 3,000 years, the people on your planet have suffered the same disease. Their entire bodies are covered with wounds that are infected, and those wounds really hurt when you touch them. Of course, they believe this is a normal physiology of the skin. Even the medical books describe this disease as a normal condition. When the people are born, their skin is healthy, but around 3 or 4 years of age, the first wounds start to appear. By the time they are teenagers, there are wounds all over their bodies. Can you imagine how these people are going to treat each other? In order to relate with someone, you would have to protect your wounds. You would hardly ever touch someone's skin because it's too painful. Still, the instinct to love is so strong that you would pay a high price to have relationships with others. Well, imagine that a miracle occurs one day. You awake, your skin is completely healed, and it doesn't hurt to be touched. Healthy skin you can touch feels wonderful because skin is made for perception. Can you imagine yourself with healthy skin in a world where everyone has a skin disease? If you can imagine this, perhaps you can understand that someone from another planet who came to visit us would have a similar experience with humans. But it isn't our skin that's full of wounds. What that visitor would discover is that the human mind is sick with a disease called fear. Just like the description of the infected skin, the emotional body is full of wounds, and these wounds are infected with emotional poison. The manifestation of the disease of fear is anger, hate, sadness, envy, and hypocrisy. The result of the disease is all the emotions that make humans suffer. All humans are mentally sick with the same disease. We can even say that this world is a mental hospital, but this mental disease has been in the world for thousands of years. The medical books, the psychiatric books, and the psychology books consider it normal, but I can tell you, it is not normal. Humans live in continuous fear of being hurt, and this creates a big drama wherever we go. The way humans relate to each other is so emotionally painful that for no apparent reason we get angry, jealous, envious, sad. To even say, "I love you," can be frightening. In order to protect our emotional wounds, and because of our fear of being hurt, humans create a big denial system. In that denial system, we become the perfect liars. We lie so perfectly that we lie to ourselves, and we even believe our own lies. Sometimes, even when we know we're lying, we justify the lie and excuse the lie to protect ourselves from the pain of our wounds. The denial system is like a wall of fog that blinds us from seeing the truth. We wear a social mask because it's too painful to see ourselves or to let others see us as we really are. The denial system lets us pretend that everyone believes what we want them to believe about us. We put up barriers to keep other people away, but those barriers also keep us inside, restricting our freedom. Humans cover themselves and protect themselves. And when someone says, "You're pushing my buttons," it is not exactly true. What is true is that you're touching a wound in his mind, and he reacts because it hurts. When you are aware that everyone around you has emotional wounds with emotional poison, you can easily understand the relationship of humans in what the Toltec call the dream of hell. From the Toltec perspective, everything we believe about ourselves and everything we know about our world is a dream. If you look at any religious description of hell, it is the same as human society, the way we dream. Hell is a place of suffering, a place of fear, war, and violence, a place of judgment and no justice, a place of punishment that never ends. Each of us creates a personal dream for our own self. But the humans before us created a big outside dream, a dream of human society. The outside dream, or the dream of the planet, is the collective dream of billions of dreamers. The big dream includes all the rules of society, its laws, its religion, its different cultures, and ways to be. All of this information stored inside our mind is like 1,000 voices talking to us at once. The Toltec call this the mitote. The real us is pure love. We are life. The real us has nothing to do with the dream. But the mitote keeps us from seeing what we really are. When you see the dream from this perspective, and if you have the awareness of what you are, you see the nonsense behavior of humans, and it becomes amusing. What for everyone else is a big drama, for you becomes a comedy. You can see humans suffering over something that is not important, that is not even real. But we have no choice. We are born in this society, we grow up in this society, and we learn to be like everyone else, playing nonsense all the time. When a human is born, the emotional body is completely healthy. If you observe children who are 2 or 3 years old, you see them playing all the time. You see them laughing. Their imagination is so powerful, and the way they dream is an adventure of exploration. When something is wrong, they react and defend themselves. But then they just let go and turn their attention to the moment again, to play again, to explore and have fun again. They are living in the moment. They are not ashamed of the past. They're not worried about the future. Little children express what they feel, and they are not afraid to love. The happiest moments in our lives are when we are playing, just like children, when we are singing and dancing, exploring and creating, just for fun. It's wonderful when we behave like a child, because this is the normal human tendency. As children, it is natural for us to express love. But what has happened to us? What has happened to the whole world? What has happened is that when we're children, the adults already have that mental disease, and they are highly contagious. How do they pass this disease to us? They hook our attention and teach us to be like them. That is how we pass our disease to our children. And that is how our parents, our teachers, our older siblings, the whole society of sick people infected us with that disease. They hooked our attention and put information into our mind through repetition. This is the way we program a human mind. By hooking the attention, we teach children a language, how to read, how to behave, how to dream. We domesticate humans the same way we domesticate a dog or any other animal, with punishment and reward. This is perfectly normal. What we call education is nothing but domestication of the human being. We are afraid to be punished, but later we are also afraid of not getting the reward, of not being good enough for mom and dad, sibling or teacher. The need to be accepted is born. Before that, we don't care whether we are accepted or not. People's opinions are not important because we just want to play and we live in the present. The fear of not getting the reward becomes the fear of rejection. The fear of not being good enough for someone else is what makes us try to change and create an image. Then we try to project that image according to what they want us to be, just to be accepted, just to have the reward. We learn to pretend to be what we are not, and we practice being someone else just to be good enough for mom and dad, for the teacher, for our religion, for whatever. We practice and practice, and we master how to be what we are not. Soon we forget who we really are, and we start to live our images. We create not just one image, but many different images according to the different groups of people we associate with. We create an image at home, an image at school, and when we grow up, we create even more images. This is also true for a simple relationship between a man and a woman. The woman has an outer image that she tries to project to others, but when she is alone, she has another image of herself. The man also has an outer image and an inner image. By the time they are adults, the inner image and the outer image are so different that they hardly match anymore. In the relationship between a man and woman, there are four images at least. How can they really know each other? They don't. They can only try to understand the image. But there are more images to consider. When a man meets a woman, he makes an image of her from his point of view, and the woman makes an image of the man from her point of view. Then he tries to make her fit the image he makes for her, and she tries to make him fit the image that she makes for him. Now there are six images between them. Of course they're lying to each other, even if they don't know they're lying. Their relationship is based on fear. It's based on lies. It is not based on truth, because they cannot see through all that fog. In the period when we are little children, there is no conflict with the images we pretend to be. Our images are not really challenged until we begin to interact with the outside world and no longer have our parents' protection. This is why being a teenager is particularly difficult. Even if we are prepared to support and defend our images, as soon as we try to project our images to the outside world starts proving to us, not just privately but publicly, that we are not what we pretend to be. Let's take the example of a teenage boy who pretends to be very intelligent. He goes to a debate at school, and in that debate, someone who is more intelligent and more prepared wins the debate and makes him look ridiculous in front of everyone. He will try to explain and excuse and justify his image in front of his peers, but as soon as he is alone and sees himself in a mirror, he hates himself and feels so stupid. There is a big discrepancy between the inner image and the image he tries to project to the outside world. The bigger the discrepancy, the less love he will have for himself. Both images are false, but he doesn't see that. When we are children, we learn that everyone's opinions are important, and we rule our lives according to these opinions. A simple opinion from someone can put us deep into hell, an opinion that is not even true. You look ugly, you're wrong, you're stupid. Opinions have a lot of power over the nonsense behavior of people who live in hell. That is why we need to hear that we are good, that we are doing well, that we are beautiful. We need to hear the opinions of others because we are domesticated and we seek recognition from other people. Humans pretend to be something very important, but at the same time we believe we are nothing. We work so hard to be important in the dream of society, to be a winner, to be powerful, to be rich, to be famous, to express our personal dream, and to impose our dream onto other people around us. Why? Because we believe the dream is real, and we take it very seriously.
Chapter 2. The Loss of Innocence. Humans by nature are very sensitive beings. We are so emotional because we perceive everything with the emotional body. The emotional body is like a radio that can be tuned to perceive and react to certain frequencies. The normal frequency of humans before domestication is to explore and to enjoy life. We are tuned to love. As children, we don't have any definition of love as an abstract concept. We just live love. It's the way we are. Our emotional body perceives emotions, and it has an alarm system to let us know when something is wrong. That alarm system is fear. Children can easily perceive when someone is angry. They can feel emotions, and their reasoning mind doesn't interpret or question them. Their alarm system generates a little fear that says, "Stay away," and they follow their instinct. When children don't feel confident around someone, they reject that person because they can feel the emotions that are being projected. Every child reacts differently according to how they learn to defend themselves and adapt to different circumstances. We learn to be emotional according to the emotional energy in our home and our personal reaction to that energy. When our parents are constantly fighting, when there is disharmony, disrespect, and lies, we learn the emotional way of being like them. Even if they tell us not to be that way and not to lie, the emotional energy of our parents, of our entire family, will make us perceive the world in a similar way. The emotional energy that lives in our home tunes our emotional body to that frequency. The emotional body starts to change its tune, and it is no longer the normal tune of the human being. We play the game of the adults. We play the game of the outside dream. And we lose our innocence. We lose our freedom, our happiness, our tendency to love. We are forced to change, and we start perceiving another reality, the reality of injustice, the reality of emotional pain, the reality of emotional poison. Welcome to hell, the hell that humans create, which is the dream of the planet. We are welcomed into that hell, but we don't invent it personally. It was here before we were born. You can see how real love and freedom are destroyed by looking at children. Imagine that you were 2 or 3 years old. You were happy. You were playing and exploring. You aren't conscious of what is good or bad, what is right or wrong, what you should or shouldn't be doing, because you are not yet domesticated. You are playing in the living room with whatever is around you. You don't have any bad intention, but you are playing with your daddy's guitar. For you, it's just a toy. You don't try to hurt your daddy at all, but your father is having one of those days when he doesn't feel right. He has problems in his business, and he finds you in the living room playing with his things. He gets mad right away, and he spanks you. This is injustice from your point of view, and that sense of injustice is like a pain in your heart. You feel hurt and start to cry. But it's not just the physical aggression that hurts you. It's the emotional aggression you feel is not fair. You didn't do anything. Your father just hurt you, and this was someone you trusted completely. Your daddy is someone who usually protects you and allows you to play and allows you to be you. That sense of injustice opens a wound in your emotional body, and in that moment you lose a little part of your innocence. You learn that you cannot always trust your father. Even if your mind doesn't know that yet because your mind doesn't analyze, it still understands, I cannot trust. Your emotional body tells you there is something you cannot trust, and that something can be repeated. Your reaction might be fear. It might be anger, or being shy, or just crying. But that reaction is already emotional poison, because the normal reaction before domestication is that your daddy spanks you and you want to hit him back. You hit him back, or just intend to put your hand up, and that makes your father even madder at you. The reaction of your father for putting your hand up against him creates a worse punishment. Now you are afraid of him, and you no longer defend yourself because you know it will only make things worse. Before this experience, your mind was completely healthy. You were completely innocent. After this experience, you learn to react in a certain way, your personal way. Humans use fear to domesticate humans, and your fear increases with each experience of injustice. You keep the emotion of fear with you, and it changes your way of life. The reasoning mind tries to do something with the experience, which will repeat itself more often now. The injustice will come from mom and dad, from brothers and sisters, from aunts and uncles, from school, from society, from everyone. With each fear, you learn to defend yourself, but not the way you did before domestication, when you would defend yourself and just keep playing. The sense of injustice is the knife that opens a wound in our emotional body. Emotional poison is created by our reaction to what we consider injustice. Some wounds will heal. Others will become infected with more and more poison. When the emotional poison accumulates, the mind begins to play with that poison. Now we start to worry a little about the future because we have the memory of the poison and we don't want that to happen again. We also have memories of being accepted. We remember mom and dad being good to us and living in harmony, but we don't know how to create it. And because we are inside the bubble of our own perception, whatever happens around us now seems as if it is because of us. We believe mom and dad fight because of us, even if it doesn't have anything to do with us. Little by little, we lose our innocence. We start to feel resentment. Then we no longer forgive. Over time, these incidents and interactions let us know it's not safe to be who we really are. Of course, this will vary in intensity with each human according to his intelligence and education. It will depend on many things. If you were lucky, the domestication is not that strong. But if you are not so lucky, the domestication can be so strong and the wound so deep that you can even be afraid to speak. Once we are full of emotional poison, we have the need to release it. And we practice releasing the poison by sending it to someone else. How do we do this? By hooking that person's attention. Let's take an example of an ordinary couple. For whatever reason, the wife is mad. She has a lot of emotional poison from an injustice that comes from her husband. The husband is not home, but she remembers that injustice, and the poison is growing inside her. When the husband comes home, the first thing she wants to do is hook his attention, because once she hooks his attention, all the poison can go to her husband, and she can feel the relief. As soon as she tells him how bad he is, how stupid, or how unfair he is, that poison she has inside her is transferred to the husband. She keeps talking until she gets his attention. The husband finally reacts and gets mad, and she feels better. But now the poison is going through him, and he has to get even. He has to hook her attention and release the poison. But it's not just her poison, it's her poison plus his poison. If you look at this interaction, you will see that they are touching each other's wounds and playing ping-pong with emotional poison until one of them explodes. This is often how humans relate with each other. The attention is something very powerful in the human mind. By hooking the attention, the energy goes from one person to another person. Everyone around the world is hunting the attention of others all the time. When we capture the attention, we create channels of communication. The dream is transferred, power is transferred, but emotional poison is transferred also. Usually, we release the poison with the person we think is responsible for the injustice. But if that person is so powerful that we cannot send it to him, we don't care who we send it to. We send it to the little ones who have no defense against us, and that is how abusive relationships are formed. The people of power abuse the people who have less power because they need to release their emotional poison. Sometimes we don't want justice. We just want to release. We want peace. That is why humans are hunting power all the time, because the more powerful we are, the easier it is to release the poison to the ones who cannot defend themselves. Of course, we are talking about relationships in hell. We are talking about the mental disease that exists on this planet. There is no one to blame for this disease. It is not good or bad or right or wrong. It is simply the normal pathology of this disease. No one is guilty for being abusive. Just as people on that imaginary planet are not guilty because their skin is sick, you are not guilty because you have wounds infected with poison. What is important is to have the awareness that we have this problem. If we have the awareness, we have the opportunity to heal our emotional body and stop the suffering. Without the awareness, there is nothing we can do. The only thing we can do is to keep suffering from the interaction with other humans, but not just with other humans, the interaction with our own self, because we also touch our own wounds just to be punished. In our mind, we create the judge. The judge is always judging everything we do, everything we don't do, everything we feel, everything we don't feel. We are judging ourselves all the time, and we are judging everyone else based on what we believe and based on the sense of justice and injustice. Of course, we find ourselves guilty and we need to be punished. The other part of our mind that receives the judgment and has the need to be punished is the victim. That part of us says, "Poor me. I'm not good enough. I'm not strong enough. I'm not intelligent enough. Why should I try?" When you were a child, you could not choose what to believe and what not to believe. The judge and the victim are based on all those false beliefs you didn't choose. When that information went into your mind, you were innocent. You believed everything. The belief system was put inside you like a program by the outside dream. The Toltec called this program the parasite. The human mind is sick because it has a parasite, which is all those beliefs that make us suffer. Those beliefs are so strong that years later when we learn new concepts and try to make our own decisions, we find those beliefs still control our lives. The parasite spreads like a disease from our grandparents to our parents to ourselves, and then we give it to our own children. We put all those programs inside our children the same way we train a dog. Humans are domesticated animals, and domestication leads us into the dream of hell where we live in fear. Before we get the parasite, we enjoy life, we play, we are happy. But after all that garbage is put into our minds, we are no longer happy. With awareness, we can easily understand why relationships don't work. With our parents, our children, our friends, our partner, and even with ourselves. Why doesn't the relationship with ourselves work? Because we are wounded and our mind is full of emotional poison. Because we grew up with an image of perfection that is not true, and in our mind it isn't fair. We have seen how we create that image of perfection to please other people, mom and dad, our teacher or minister, our religion, and God. But the truth is that from their point of view, we are never going to be perfect. That image of perfection tells us how we should be in order to acknowledge that we are good, in order to accept ourselves. But guess what? This is the biggest lie we believe about ourselves, because we are never going to be perfect, and there is no way that we can forgive ourselves for not being perfect. The image of perfection changes the way we dream. We learn to deny ourselves and reject ourselves. We are never good enough, or right enough, or clean enough, or healthy enough, according to all those beliefs we have. There is always something the judge can never accept or forgive. That is why we reject our own humanity. That is why we never deserve to be happy. That is why we are searching for someone who will abuse and punish us. We have a very high level of self-abuse because of that image of perfection. When we reject ourselves and judge ourselves and find ourselves guilty and punish ourselves, it looks like there is only punishment, only suffering, only judgment in this world instead of love. Hell has many different levels. Some people are very deep in hell, and other people are hardly in hell, but still they are in hell. There are very abusive relationships in hell and relationships with hardly any abuse. But you are no longer a child. And if you have an abusive relationship, it is because you accept that abuse. You believe you deserve it. You have a limit to the amount of abuse you will accept, but no one in the whole world abuses you more than you abuse yourself. And the limit of your self-abuse is the limit you will tolerate from other people. If someone abuses you more than you abuse yourself, you walk away, you run, you escape. But if someone abuses you a little less than you abuse yourself, perhaps you stay longer because you believe you deserve that abuse. Of course, energy attracts the same kind of energy, the same vibration. If someone comes to you and says, "Oh, I am so abused," and you ask, "Well, why do you stay there?" He doesn't even know why. The truth is, he needs that abuse because that is the way he punishes himself. Life brings to you exactly what you need. There is perfect justice in hell. There is nothing to blame. We can even say that your suffering is a gift. If you just open your eyes and see what's around you, it's exactly what you need to clean your poison, to heal your wounds, to accept yourself, and to get out of hell.
Chapter 3. The Man Who Didn't Believe in Love. There's a very old story about a man who didn't believe in love. This was an ordinary man, just like you and me. But what made this man special was his way of thinking. He thought, love doesn't exist. Of course, he had a lot of experience trying to find love, and he had observed the people around him. This man was highly intelligent and very convincing. He said that love is not real, and that's why no human being could ever find love, even though he might look for it. Love, he said, is just like a drug. It makes you very high, but it creates a strong need. You can become addicted to love. But what happens when you don't receive your daily doses of love? Just like a drug, you need your everyday doses. He used to say that most relationships between lovers are just like a relationship between a drug addict and the one who provides the drugs. The one who has the biggest need is like the drug addict. The one who has a little need is like the provider. And this is the one who controls the whole relationship. You can see this dynamic so clearly, because usually in every relationship, there is one who loves the most and the other who doesn't love, who only takes advantage of the one who gives his or her heart. The drug addict, the one who has the biggest need, lives in constant fear that perhaps he will not be able to get the next dosage of love. The drug addict thinks, "What am I going to do if she leaves me?" That fear makes the addict very possessive. That's mine. The addict becomes jealous and demanding because of the fear of not getting the next dosage. He completely surrenders and will do whatever he can to avoid being abandoned. The provider can control and manipulate the one who needs the drug by giving more doses, fewer doses, or no doses at all. The man went on explaining why love doesn't exist. What humans call love is nothing but a fear relationship based on control. Where is the respect? Where is the love they claim to have? Young couples make a lot of promises to each other, to live together forever, to love and respect each other, to be there for each other, through the good times and the bad. They promise to love and honor each other, and make promises and more promises. What is amazing is that they really believe these promises. But after the marriage, 1 week later, a month later, a few months later, you can see that none of these promises are kept. What you find is a war of control to see who will manipulate whom. Who will be the provider and who will have the addiction? You find that a few months later the respect they had for each other is gone. You can see the resentment, the emotional poison, how they hurt each other, little by little until they don't know when the love stopped. They stay together because they are afraid to be alone, afraid of the opinions and judgments of others, and also afraid of their own judgments and opinions. But where is the love? The man used to claim that he saw old couples who were so proud to have lived together 30, 40, or 50 years or more. But when they talked about their relationship, they said, "We survived the matrimony." That means one of them surrendered to the other at a certain time. He or she gave up and decided to endure the suffering. The one with the strongest will and less need won the war. But where is that flame they call love? The man went on and on about all the reasons why he believed love doesn't exist. His arguments were quite logical, and he convinced many people. Then one day he was walking in a park, and there on a bench sat a beautiful lady who was crying. Feeling curious, he decided to ask why she was crying. You can imagine his surprise when she told him she was crying because love doesn't exist. Of course, he wanted to know more about her. Why do you say that love doesn't exist? He asked. Well, it's a long story, she replied. I married when I was very young, full of hope that I would share my life with this man. We swore to each other our loyalty, respect, and honor, and we created a family. But soon everything changed. I was the devoted wife who took care of the children and the home. My husband continued to develop his career, and his success outside of home was more important to him than our family. He lost respect for me, and I lost respect for him. We hurt each other, and at a certain point I discovered that I didn't love him, and he didn't love me either. But the children needed a father, and that was my excuse to stay and do whatever I could to support him. Now the children are grown, and I no longer have any excuse to stay with him. There's no respect, there's no kindness. I know that even if I find someone else, it's going to be the same, because love doesn't exist. That's why I'm crying. Understanding her very well, he embraced her and said, "You were right. Love doesn't exist. We look for love, we open our heart, and become vulnerable just to find selfishness. It doesn't matter how many relationships we have, the same thing happens again and again. Why search for love any longer?" They were so much alike, and they became best friends. It was a wonderful relationship. They respected each other, and with every step they took together, they were happy. There was no envy or jealousy. There was no control. There was no possessiveness. They loved to be together because they always had a lot of fun. When they were not together, they missed each other. One day, when the man was out of town, he had the weirdest idea. He was thinking, maybe what I feel for her is love. But this is so different from what I have ever felt before. I don't feel responsible for her. I don't have the need for her to take care of me. I don't need to blame her for my difficulties. We have the best time together. I respect the way she thinks and feels. She doesn't embarrass me. I don't feel jealous when she's with other people. I don't feel envy when she is successful. Perhaps love does exist, but it's not what everyone thinks love is. He could hardly wait to go back home and let her know about his idea. As soon as he told her, she said, "I know exactly what you're talking about. I had the same idea long ago, but I didn't want to share it with you because I know you don't believe in love. Perhaps love does exist, but it isn't what we thought it was." They decided to become lovers and live together, and it was amazing that things didn't change. They still respected each other, and the love grew more and more. Even the simplest things made their hearts sing with love because they were so happy. Then one night, a great miracle happened. The man was looking at the stars, and he found the most beautiful one, and his heart was so full of love that the star came down from the sky, and soon it was in his hands. Then a second miracle happened, and his soul merged with that star. He was intensely happy, and he could hardly wait to go to the woman and put the star in her hands to prove his love to her. But as soon as he put the star in her hands, she felt a moment of doubt. This love was overwhelming, and in that moment the star fell from her hands and broke into a million pieces. Now there is an old man walking around the world, swearing that love doesn't exist. And there is a beautiful old woman at home, waiting for a man, shedding a tear for a paradise that she once had in her hands, but for one moment of doubt she let it go. This is the story about the man who didn't believe in love. Who made the mistake? The mistake was on the man's part in thinking he could give the woman his happiness. The star was his happiness, and his mistake was to put his happiness in her hands. Happiness never comes from outside of us. He was happy because of the love coming out of him. She was happy because of the love coming out of her. But as soon as he made her responsible for his happiness, she broke the star because she could not be responsible for his happiness. No matter how much the woman loved him, she could never make him happy because she could never know what he had in his mind. She could never know what his expectations were. She could not know his dreams. If you take your happiness and put it in someone's hands, sooner or later that person is going to break it. If you give your happiness to someone else, he or she can always take it away. Then, if happiness can only come from inside of you and is the result of your love, you are responsible for your happiness. We can never make anyone responsible for our own happiness. But when we go to the church to get married, the first thing we do is exchange rings. We put our star in each other's hands, expecting that she is going to make you happy and you are going to make her happy. It doesn't matter how much you love someone. You are never going to be what that person wants you to be. That is the mistake most of us make right from the beginning. We base our happiness on our partner, and it doesn't work that way. We make promises that we cannot keep, and we set ourselves up to fail.
Chapter 4. The Track of Love, the Track of Fear. Your whole life is nothing but a dream. You live in a fantasy where everything you know about yourself is only true for you. Your truth is not the truth for anyone else, and that includes your own children or your own parents. Just consider what you believe about yourself and what your mother believes about you. She can say she knows you very well, but she has no idea who you really are. You can believe that you know your mother very well, but you don't have any idea who she really is. She has all those fantasies in her mind that she never shared with anyone else. You have no idea what is inside her mind. If you look at your own life and try to remember what you did when you were 11 or 12 years old, you will hardly remember more than 5% of your own life. Of course, you will remember the most important things, like your own name, because you repeat these all the time. But sometimes you forget the names of your own children or your friends. That's because your life is made by dreams, many little dreams that are changing all the time. Dreams have a tendency to dissolve, and that is why we forget so easily. Every human being has a personal dream of life that is completely different from anyone else's dream. We dream according to all the beliefs that we have, and we modify our dream according to the way we judge and are victimized. That is why dreams are never the same for any two people. In a relationship, we can pretend to be the same, to think the same, to feel the same, to dream the same, but there are two dreamers with two different dreams. That is why we need to accept the differences that exist between two dreamers. We need to respect each other's dream. We can have thousands of relationships at the same time, but every relationship is between two persons, and no more than two. According to the way the two people dream, they create the direction of that dream we call relationship. Every relationship we have, with mom, dad, brothers, sisters, or friends, is unique because we dream a small dream together. Every relationship becomes a living being made by two dreamers. Just as your body is made by cells, your dreams are made by emotions. There are two main sources of those emotions. One is fear, and all the emotions that come from fear. The other is love, and all the emotions that come from love. We experience both emotions, but the one that predominates in everyday people is fear. The normal kind of relationship in this world is based 95% on fear and 5% on love. Of course, this will change depending upon the people, but even if fear is 60% and love is 40%, still it is based on fear. In order to understand these emotions, we can describe certain characteristics about love and fear that we will call the track of love and the track of fear. These two tracks are merely points of reference to see how we are living our life to allow the logical mind to understand and to try to have some control of the choices we make. Let's look at some of the characteristics of love and fear. Love has no obligations. Fear is full of obligations. In the track of fear, whatever we do is because we have to do it, and we expect other people to do something because they have to do it. We have the obligation, and as soon as we have to, we resist it. The more resistance we have, the more we suffer. Sooner or later, we try to escape our obligations. On the other hand, love has no resistance. Whatever we do is because we want to do it. It becomes a pleasure. It's like a game, and we have fun with it. Love has no expectations. Fear is full of expectations. With fear, we do things because we expect that we have to, and we expect that others are going to do the same. That is why fear hurts and love doesn't hurt. We expect something, and if it doesn't happen, we feel hurt. It isn't fair. We blame others for not fulfilling our expectations. When we love, we don't have expectations. We do it because we want to. And if other people do it or not, it's because they want to or not, and it's nothing personal. When we don't expect something to happen, if nothing happens, it's not important. We don't feel hurt, because whatever happens is okay. That is why hardly anything hurts us when we are in love. We aren't expecting that our lover will do something, and we have no obligations. Love is based on respect. Fear doesn't respect anything, including itself. If I feel sorry for you, it means I don't respect you. You cannot make your own choices. When I have to make the choices for you, at that point I don't respect you. If I don't respect you, then I try to control you. Most of the time when we tell our children how to live their lives, it's because we don't respect them. We feel sorry for them, and we try to do for them what they should do for themselves. When I don't respect myself, I feel sorry for myself. I feel I'm not good enough to make it in this world. How do you know when you don't respect yourself? When you say, "Poor me, I'm not strong enough, I'm not intelligent enough, I'm not beautiful enough, I cannot make it." Self-pity comes from disrespect. Love is ruthless. It doesn't feel sorry for anyone, but it does have compassion. Fear is full of pity. It feels sorry for everyone. You feel sorry for me when you don't respect me, when you don't think I'm strong enough to make it. On the other hand, love respects. I love you. I know you can make it. I know you are strong enough, intelligent enough, good enough that you can make your own choices. I don't have to make your choices for you. You can make it. If you fall, I can give you my hand. I can help you to stand up and say, "You can do it. Go ahead." That is compassion, but it is not the same as feeling sorry. Compassion comes from respect and from love. Feeling sorry comes from a lack of respect and from fear. Love is completely responsible. Fear avoids responsibility, but this doesn't mean that it's not responsible. Trying to avoid responsibility is one of the biggest mistakes we make because every action has a consequence. Everything we think, everything we do has a consequence. If we make a choice, we have an outcome or a reaction. If we don't make a choice, we have an outcome or a reaction. We are going to experience the consequence of our actions in one way or another. That is why every human is completely responsible for his actions, even if he doesn't want to be. Other people can try to pay for your mistakes, but you will pay for your mistakes anyway, and then you pay double. When others try to be responsible for you, it only creates a bigger drama. Love is always kind. Fear is always unkind. With fear, we are full of obligations, full of expectations, with no respect, avoiding responsibility, and feeling sorry. How can we feel good when we are suffering from so much fear? We feel victimized by everything. We feel angry or sad or jealous or betrayed. Anger is nothing but fear with a mask. Sadness is fear with a mask. Jealousy is fear with a mask. With all those emotions that come from fear and create suffering, we can only pretend to be kind. We are not kind because we don't feel good. We are not happy. If you are in the track of love, you have no obligations, no expectations. You don't feel sorry for yourself or for your partner. Everything is going well for you, and a smile is always on your face. You are feeling good about yourself, and because you are happy, you are kind. Love is always kind, and that kindness makes you generous and opens all the doors. Love is generous. Fear is selfish, and selfishness closes all the doors. Love is unconditional. Fear is full of conditions. In the track of fear, I love you if you let me control you, if you are good to me, if you fit into the image I make for you. I create an image of the way you should be, and because you are not and never will be the image, I judge you because of that and find you guilty. Many times I even feel ashamed of you because you are not what I want you to be. If you don't fit that image I create, you embarrass me, you annoy me, I have no patience at all with you. I'm just pretending kindness. In the track of love, there is no if. There are no conditions. I love you for no reason, with no justification. I love you the way you are, and you are free to be the way you are. If I don't like the way you are, then I'd better be with someone who is the way I like him to be. We don't have the right to change anyone else, and no one else has the right to change us. If we are going to change, it is because we want to change, because we don't want to suffer any longer. Most people live their entire lives in the track of fear. They are in a relationship because they feel they have to be. They are in a relationship where they have all those expectations about their partner and about themselves. All that drama and suffering is because we are using the channels of communication that existed before we were born. People judge and are victimized. They gossip about each other. They make their family members hate each other. They accumulate emotional poison and they send it to their children. Look at your father, what he did to me. Don't be like your father. All men are like this. All women are like that. This is what we do with the people we love so much, with our own children, with our own friends, with our partners. In the track of fear, we have so many conditions, expectations, and obligations that we create a lot of rules just to protect ourselves against emotional pain. These rules affect the quality of the channels of communication between us because when we are afraid, we lie. If you have the expectation that I have to be a certain way, then I feel the obligation to be that way. The truth is, I am not what you want me to be. When I am honest, and I am what I am, you are already hurt. You are mad. Then I lie to you because I am afraid of your judgment. I am afraid you are going to blame me, find me guilty, and punish me. And every time you remember, you punish me again and again and again for the same mistake. In the track of love, there is justice. If you make a mistake, you pay only once for that mistake, and if you truly love yourself, you learn from that mistake.